Hello. Thank you for watching and listening to You at Options. This episode of the very talented Brady Turner in person. Very fun conversation. He does some covers towards the end. Yeah, great time. Go check out his tour dates coming up in January on BradyTurnerMusic.com. Go like him on social media. Follow him, Brady Turner Music. Yeah, go follow You at Options, at You at Options on everything. Go buy some merch at TheHandsomeScoundrels.com/shop. There's a You at Options shirt on there. Go buy some Scoundrel stuff. The van's fucked, so we gotta sell some merch. Yeah, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Michael, how are you now?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I've been watching a lot of Letterkenny. You know that show?
Yeah.
And so now every time I see my 8-month-old, I say, "How are you now?"
How is your child?
She's awesome, man. I was gonna be extra private about it and just say it's like
don't even
ambiguous.
Yeah,
they're great. Yeah, she's doing awesome, man. She's really good. I'm still kind of adjusting to just the inconsistency in sleep patterns.
Ooh,
you know?
Yeah.
Really not so much just her, but just adjusting to, like, she wakes up like twice a night, maybe on a good night, you know?
Yeah.
And I was very much like a 10 hours kind of guy, you know, before. Like, even if, because I'm a night owl for sure. Like, I'll yeah. stay up until 1 or 2 a.m., but then I'll probably sleep pretty late, you know, especially since right. like I'm a musician. Most of the time I'm not doing anything until later in the day if I have a show or something, you know, right. unless I'm like going to be on the road or something. But yeah, I'm still kind of getting used to this. Some nights it's 4 hours I get or like 3, and then I still have to do stuff I got to do. But it's been good.
Sleep.
I'm really happy with it. Yeah, I think all the things that I was most worried about have been the least problem. Like, I was really, for instance, as a married man who wasn't thinking about having kids, the worst thing to me would have been like, oh, I'm going to have to change shitty diapers and stuff like that.
But
like,
now you're used to
that stuff. Does not bother me at all.
Yeah, green
like,
poop.
Once you look at the kid, you're like, ah, this is fine. I can do this. You know, whatever she needs is fine. But yeah, it's been good. Me and Sid are doing good. I really like Knoxville a lot. I think when I did your podcast before, it was your second episode.
Yes,
I think
something like
maybe
that.
The first record, but the second. I'm pretty sure it's the second episode that came out.
Yeah.
So I was on the way out of Mobile when we recorded last time, and so now I've been in Knoxville for like a year, and it's great. I love it. It's been kind of a jumping off point, I think, for us in terms of just like reaching other markets with the music and stuff. Being able to like, especially with Bailey, you know, Bailey, my brother,
right.
Especially with Bailey being out in Springfield, Missouri now, and having, we kind of built this like bridge of connections between like, I have a place to play in Knoxville. I can play in Nashville, Memphis, you know, on the way out to yeah. where they live. So now I kind of have this like, line out to the rest of the country, whereas before I was like, I don't know where to even begin, like trying to reach someone outside of the Southeast or whatever.
Yeah.
But I feel like I have my head around that a little bit better than I did before. And I've got some new stuff coming out. I'm not 100% what I'm gonna actually say. The one thing I know will happen for sure is on January 10th I'm gonna release a new single called Is This Love. that's pretty much all the way done. it needs to go out like this week, actually, but just some like final mixing stuff to do on that. But yeah, it's done.
Is it all you?
Yeah, I wrote and recorded it. The basis for the song was started on the stream, on the improv music stream on Twitch, which I started that after we did the first episode, yeah. I think. So I'm not doing that every week right now with recording and touring and everything, but I'd like to do that again consistently at some point. Maybe I'll do it a little bit less when I get my computer stuff in order. That's a whole other thing. But I started streaming on Twitch, twitch.tv/Brady Turner Music.
Yeah.
I was really good at plugging that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll play games on there a little bit, and I started doing improv music on there in Ableton, where I'll just build loops and go crazy with ideas and suggestions from the chat, and then my brothers, of course, are on there, so they'll like send me drops to play, and dumb Brad will send me like dumb stuff that he ripped from YouTube, and I'll play it over the beat and stuff, and it's really fun. I'd like to do it a lot more. I actually was just talking to my wife the other day about a way that I could like do that live somehow, not maybe as my main thing, but it would be fun to maybe a couple times a year, like once a quarter or something, do a show that's like an improv music show, and build the loops in person and stuff. So that might be happening at some point next year.
Yeah, that'd like be to cool. To that. Yeah, I would like to do a live podcast.
Yeah,
at some point. I guess I just got to get like.
I went to see the Doughboys. I think it was in 2019 with Bradley, and that was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in person. I kind of underestimated how funny a live podcast would be, and it was a lot of fun. I think the live audience really adds like the energy there is. It's fun to see people that you like in that atmosphere.
Yeah. What were they eating food? What was there?
So they did Waffle House that night, and so I think they ate it like the night before or whatever, and reviewed it at the show. But what's great about Doughboys is they don't, or at least at this show, they didn't announce ahead of time what the chain was. So we're in Huntsville, Alabama, and when they realized it was Waffle House, people were like, "Yes!"
People have an affinity for Waffle House down here.
How are you? Do you like Waffle House?
I like Waffle House. I can't remember having a bad food experience. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much, we actually were just talking about this with my brother-in-law Carcass recently, and I feel like Waffle House is like, it's like really bad, but it's incredibly consistent. Like quality-wise bad, probably for your body bad, but you know exactly what you're going to get. Like, no matter if it's 2 a.m., you know, and everything else is closed, it's probably going to taste exactly the same. Like, greasy, but also really good.
Yeah, it's similar in consistency with Cracker Barrel, I would say.
Yeah, but you can get it at like 4 a.m.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm about it. We go there. That's one of those things where if you're like at an exit where everything looks kind of terrible, but there's a Waffle House, you're like, all right, we'll be all right.
Yeah.
It'll be good.
Mm. But you just put out a Xmas EP?
Yeah. So basically, I kind of recanonized some songs like... Because essentially,
taking them back.
Yeah, I've been kind of like, I've been putting out Christmas stuff every year to some degree, but it's just like whether or not I actually get out in front of it and promote it goes back and forth. And I was really proud of some of the stuff that I had done in the past, and I also had this new thing that I was working on, wanted to work on with Bradley, Merry Little Christmas cover with him.
Yeah.
We had been doing that together just at events, Christmas events and stuff. And I'd always wanted to record it, but it's really short, like the version that I wanted to do. So I was like, I want something to go with this. I don't really particularly want to record a whole another Christmas project. You know what I'm saying? So I reworked some of the stuff that there were just like very small things in the mixing and mastering from This Christmas and I'll Be Home for Christmas. Both of those, I just made some really small adjustments to sonically and in the mastering process, and put those out as one, kind of remastered them all together so they would be more consistent.
Yeah.
Cause they were recorded in different places, like, Home for Christmas was recorded at a studio in Knoxville called Sequoia Studios. But then, like, This Christmas was recorded on a different setup in Mobile at my house. And the one that I did with Bradley, Merry Little Xmas, was recorded at my new place in Knoxville. So I had to try to kind of make it all
sound a like package it was deal. Recorded.
Yeah. And they're all different enough that it didn't really particularly matter that there's, like, different mics being used and stuff, because it's, like, sonically, they, for instance, like, the first song is only an SM58 on the vocal, and then the song that I recorded at Sequoia was, like, some vintage Neumann mic that, like, I could never afford.
Right.
And so it was really interesting to kind of try to package those together as one thing.
Oh, shit. Have you been able to network and meet new musicians and
yeah your area now? I was just telling my stepmom last night, we were doing Christmas stuff, and I think that the people in Knoxville are really, really accommodating to new people, like, in a way that I haven't really seen before. Like, nothing bad about Mobile. I definitely had friends here in music here, and people who helped me, like Jamel Richardson and you guys, like the Handsome Scoundrels, people who are really nice to me that, you know, over the years would be like, hey, this thing you might be good for, or whatever. Yeah. Like, I definitely had people who hooked me up here, but for whatever reason in Knoxville, almost every gig I play, I feel like someone comes up and is like, hey, I'm trying to do music around here, and, like, you should really talk to this person, and this guy owns this brewery or a place that has live music. And I feel like people have gone out of their way to make me feel like a part of what's going on up there. So that's been cool. It's encouraged me to actually participate, you know, a little bit more in what that's everybody's cool. got going on, try to get to know people and stuff, especially after a year of just, like, mostly playing for people online and not really participating in anything like that. Even when I was here in Mobile, that wasn't really something I was good at, I don't think. It's what's just that? Like networking, and
it's tough, it's weird,
the things that you need to do, like going to other people's shows, listening to other bands, you know, at least, like, knowing what's in your area, like looking at the local talent and stuff. I just don't think I did a good job of that. I think I thought when I was younger, like, I just need to work really hard on myself, and then whatever is going to happen will just happen somehow.
I mean, there's, you obviously got to be good, or you don't even have to be that good, but it's just like a lot of who you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of the biggest things that I've done, all the biggest opportunities that I've gotten have not necessarily come from, like, save one or two where somebody was like, hey, I just heard you sing, and, like, that's why I want you to do this thing. Sometimes that happens, but a lot of times it's like, hey, so-and-so told me that I should reach out to you, and they're your friends, so you can do it. They're not going to be like, send me a demo or whatever. Maybe sometimes, but for sure, it's definitely at least half and half. I don't think, also don't think you have to be great. Definitely. I mean, everybody knows that you can point to whatever, extremely successful pop star that's not very good, you know, enter name here. I won't.
Michael McAuliffe.
Extremely successful pop star. That's on your business card. I would love to see you just take a hard turn to, like, super, like, bubblegum pop. Justin Bieber's.
I'm down for that.
It's the record that everybody actually likes of his. Is it called Promise? Or it's something really basic like
just
that.
Just in Time.
It's the Just in Time.
I don't know.
I would be really happy if it's the one that has that song. Is it too late now to say sorry?
Have you heard that song? Oh, yeah.
So that album, that's what I picture for your next, like,
I'd be down.
Foray. Just, like, extremely high production value.
If there's any
Rick Rubin pop is involved producers somehow.
Yeah, if Rick Rubin is listening, please feel free to reach out to.
We know that he is.
Somebody in a circle has to be listening.
I mean, yeah, of course. What are the odds that someone in Rick Rubin's circle isn't listening to this?
Pretty small.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Kanye Drake?
I did. Show? I didn't watch it live. Bradley texted me during it and was like, are you watching this? This is crazy. Kanye is just doing nothing but hits all back hits. To back to back. Yeah. And I didn't know what was going on. But yeah, I watched it the next day. It was wild.
I thought it was great.
Yeah. I didn't really... I didn't see the whole Drake part, but I pretty much watched all of Kanye's this set, like the part where he's just doing, like, he went from like what is Late Registration, or no, College Dropout was the first one. Yeah, then Late Registration. Yeah. He hit like all the hits.
Yeah, he went like through, if it has like a star catalog
next to it on Apple Music, he played that one.
Yeah.
Touch the Sky, I remember. I love that song. That Curtis Mayfield sample is like, because it's, I can't remember what the Curtis Mayfield song is. Superfly, maybe? I can't remember which song of his it is, but yeah, that I love that sample so much. All the old Kanye stuff where it was clearly made on like an MPC 3000 and it's mostly just like a vinyl sample and some really like 90s boom bap drums.
Yeah.
I really love that stuff. Like, that's where I really fell in love with Kanye as a teenager, was the production, you know, like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. Oh, so this is a thing. So, you know, Mike Dean,
right? Yeah. I was going to bring him up.
Yeah. Me and Brad have been talking a lot about his, just like lead tone recently. Cause he was on that, live stream and he was shredding.
He must be his band leader.
Yeah. Cause he was like, he was giving him some production. Like,
Mike,
direction.
Go to the next song.
Yeah. And he'll be like, just I don't know the piano lyrics. And the choir. Yeah. Like, oh, that's something I started to say, is I love that Kanye will do 10 seconds of a song.
Okay.
And he's like, this was the good part. Let's move on. And some rappers will be like, I was featured on this song for 30 seconds and we're going to do the full 5-minute song. Yeah. I'm going to rap along to all the features and everything. Like, I love that Kanye just does his part and skips right to the next song.
I think, and like during that, you could tell like he didn't know some of the lyrics.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's also like, he doesn't rehearse or anything.
Right, no, he just goes.
There's no way, Like, he's been doing Jesus Walks since, whatever, 2004. He's not rehearsing with the band or whatever. Yeah, I mean, I would love to be at that place where I could just mumble my way through 30 of my songs.
People love it.
And make
people
a crazy amount of money. Yeah.
Ate it up.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mike Dean's...
Mike Dean, his guitar. What I started to say about him is recently I was reading that he hates the mastering on My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. And that kind of blew my mind, because since whenever, I mean, I guess, so the VMAs thing happened in 2009 and the My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is 2010, I think. And from pretty much the first time I heard it to now, it's my favorite, maybe my favorite album, but really my favorite hip-hop album by a long ways, which I know is kind of crazy because there's a lot of really great old school hip-hop that people point to as like, you know, like a Tribe Called Quest record or something is what a lot of people would probably say is like the greatest.
It's just different.
Yeah. But for me, in terms of modern hip-hop, at least 2000s hip-hop or whatever, that from start to finish, I could put that album on pretty much any day and finish the whole thing. From the like Nicki Minaj intro thing, she does like a fairy tale book.
Oh, that's
thing
right
at the beginning.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it in a while.
Yeah. I think Sid and I actually listened to it in the car pretty recently. But yeah, I put some songs on that on after I read that Mike Dean hated the mastering, and I was like, I don't know, man. I think this is a perfect record. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I he's a genius in a lot of ways. I mean, so in some ways, I would say I yield to him. Yeah. Whatever he thinks is cool too, but I think it's like a perfect album.
Yeah. It's great. Have you looked at like a rig rundown of
Mike
him?
Dean? So the thing, the weird thing with him is most of those sounds that I like, from like on Yeezus, the Hold My Liquor, you know, when it goes to the like crazy guitar drop part at the end. There's like some synth and guitar stuff going on. All those sounds that he makes are apparently just like plugins that he uses on his guitar, just like a Waves guitar rack plugin or something like that.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, like just like an amp sim, maybe like a distortion pedal sim, like an octave or something. Damn. And then just like a, like, I don't know if you've heard of H-Delay, but that's a popular VST plugin that's really good, a Waves plugin. And it's just a really nice like analog voiced delay. I think he uses that. Really simple, but he's just kind of a wizard, I guess. And I mean, I think it has a lot to do with the EQing as well. Anytime I'm trying to just rip him off, it ends up being just like a real mid hump, and everything else is kind of, you know, swept away because mm-hmm. it's mostly just that nasally, like, gnarly cuts through the mix sound.
Yeah.
Super lo-fi kind of sound.
Mm. Have you, the further along you get in making your own music and producing your own music, have you found yourself stripping away stuff or not trying to over-engineer?
That's a really good, something that Bradley, my older brother Bradley, kind of taught me somewhat early on after kind of trying to record my own stuff for a while with a little bit of his guidance. One of the things that I learned from him in the last couple of years was like, try to record the thing as close to the finished product as you can. Like, obviously that's going to mean a lot of different things if you're in a studio with $1 million worth of gear, or if you're plugging into your laptop and recording that way. Mm-hmm. But as far as just like, try to make the source sound as good as it can be first, the room, and then the miking of the source sound, all those things, if they're like where they should be, mixing it really shouldn't be that much of a pain in the ass, just because everything from a production standpoint should already be sitting good where it's supposed to sit, you know, like, I know where how I want the kick and the bass to work together. And if I'm like engineering those sounds the right way, when I get to the mix down process, I shouldn't be like, well, sometimes you are, especially if you're working with other people's recordings and stuff, but I shouldn't so much be like surgically EQing and editing things as much as I want to like, just get it sounding really good first. Mm-hmm. And then, but I do a lot. I mean, I definitely do a lot of both, especially working, in different situations, like some stuff's been done on only a laptop or some stuff on like my PC with just my plugged right into my interface or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So there's definitely my fair share of like comp, I'll definitely comp vocals and get my favorite takes and cut them together and stuff like that. I'm not above that at all. I try to avoid, like, in general, I don't use pitch correction just because I've always had a fear that I won't be able to replicate the thing live.
Oh,
and that's something I
then we got a viral video of
yeah, exactly,
Bailey or Brady Turner
off on, yeah, but Brady, yeah, I've always wrestled with that, and I actually kind of started to go on a rabbit trail there because I have kind of deviated from worrying about recreating the thing live.
Yeah.
As far as the music, because I used to, like when I was making Overthrown, my first album, I feel like I spent a lot of time thinking, how am I gonna play this song with like a band, or how am I gonna play this song in a solo set or whatever, yeah, and make it sound like this? And that just doesn't, you'll figure that stuff out later, you know? And you kind of just, I've kind of figured out all those songs over time. The ones that I do want to play live, if it needs to be changed, I'll just change it.
Yeah.
And I've tried to stop thinking so much about like, how is this going to work live, and just make it sound as good as it can, you know, and not worry so much about like, oh, if I do this weird, like time signature change or whatever, how am I going to do that in a looping scenario live? And I'll just figure it out later.
Yes,
and that kind of makes it fun when I go to work on like my solo set and figure out how can I do this with just my guitar and a looper pedal or whatever I'm using, you know? Yeah.
Have you wanted to have like, because when you're doing live stuff now, it's just you, mm-hmm, and you're using tracks, I guess.
So basically, initially, like, pre-pandemic, when I thought I was going to be able to take the Overthrown stuff on the road the first time, I was going to be running like electronic drums, some synth bass, like some of the synth parts and stuff like that, maybe some of the backing guitars, and then playing along on like keys and guitar, and probably Bradley on bass. But now, right now, I'm mostly just traveling by myself and just doing kind of the analog version of that, where if I'm on guitar, I'll just do kind of like a crude production loop art production, a percussion loop on my guitar, just like muted strings or whatever, and loop that and then play like a little bass line and just do it like that. So there's not like drum machines and stuff. It's all just me.
Loops.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But it's been really fun. I've had a lot of fun kind of breaking everything down and figuring out how to translate some of the stuff like that I used to do with more moving parts, like a drum machine and the actual synthesizer and all the stuff that I had with me when I was doing the We Made It tour.
Yeah.
And it's been fun to scale it back a little bit. It also makes it way easier when you're the only person that doing everything, a lot of the shows, you know, setting up your own stuff and everything.
Yeah, damn. What's your merch like now?
So I imagine by the time this comes out, we'll already have some new merch out, so that'll be cool too. When I go out on the road this time, which I should have said, I don't know if there's like a plug section. I don't want to jump out in front of anything.
Plug.
But I do. I'm going to be on tour pretty much from New Year's Eve until the end of February. Off and on, we'll be in and out of East Tennessee, going back out to the Midwest and coming down south. I'm playing a show in Mobile on January 9th. I'll be in New Orleans the night before. But yeah, the main thing is, if you are listening to this and you want to come see me somewhere, just go to bradyturnermusic.com and I'll have the latest version of this, because some of this is subject to change. But I'll be out and about doing the guitar looping and the tiny keyboard.
That's cool. Yeah. What kind of, are you playing at, like, what are the venues like?
It's kind of a mixed bag. So like on New Year's Eve, I'm playing this outrageously large ball drop event in Gatlinburg.
Okay. And what are
they have like a little space needle in Gatlinburg.
Right.
I think they drop the ball from the,
is it a ball or is it like Dolly Parton? Like a
it's too huge.
Dolly
boobs.
Parton boob. Yeah.
That'd be sick. I hope it is. No, I
get on a Gatlinburg. Get
and it together. I'm not gonna be the honorary, like, I'm not playing at midnight.
You're not hitting famous. The button to drop the...
No, that would be so... I'm going to step on a distortion pedal. No, I'm playing at like 9 o'clock, but it'll be...
That's cool.
It'll be crazy. I'm excited to see the madness that is New Year's Eve in Gatlinburg.
Yeah.
I'm going to get my booster before I go, probably, but yeah, it'll be fun.
I went a couple months ago, me and some buddies went up to Gatlinburg and...
Nice.
Went, did Dollywood, did all that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Downtown Gatlinburg.
Yeah, we did some dates. When I was with Sydney early on, I think we were probably engaged. I remember we went to Dollywood for 2 days because we got there like 45 minutes before they closed one night, and they told us that we could just use our tickets the next day too.
Mm.
So we were like, sick, we'll just come back tomorrow, and did a whole day for free essentially.
Damn. I like Dollywood. Dollywood's cool.
Yeah, it's like, I like Dollywood for like we did at that time, like maybe an hour the night before and then like 3 hours the next day, and then you've pretty much done everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not
like Disney World.
No,
like,
it's not huge and
spread
out. But
I love Dolly Parton. Like, I kind of, there's a lot of songs of hers that I like. She seems like a pretty cool person from what I know about her. And like, living in Knoxville, living in Tennessee, my daughter, until she's, I think, 5 years old, gets like a book every month because of Dolly Parton. It's like part of her
just
foundation.
Being in Tennessee.
It's, yeah, some kind of like philanthropy thing she does. She's
Damn.
Responsible for. So every kid in Tennessee from, I think, maybe it's 6 months. It might be 6 months until 5 years or something like that. But yeah, they get a book every month.
Damn.
So we've been getting a lot of free books from Dolly Parton.
What kind, are they just like books about Dolly Parton?
No, that would be hilarious. They're only just indoctrination about Jolene and stuff. No, it's like Clifford the Big Red Dog and stuff like that.
Oh, it's like normal kid.
Little Engine That Could.
Okay, normal.
Yeah, To Give a Mouse a Cookie. You know, we read that to her recently.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's What's Up. It's really cool.
Mm.
I really like Tennessee so far.
It seems like a cool place.
Yeah, and it's like, I like living 2 hours from Nashville and not living in that, you know, I can get there and do what I need to do if I need to.
Yeah.
Or if I want to play a show there or go look at like the crazy cache of gear that is in all the vintage stores, you know.
Yeah.
It's the best for that kind of stuff, but I don't have to be in that all the time and be in like stepping on everybody to make it mode, you know.
That's what you gotta do, brother.
Yeah. Gonna step on some throats.
That's right. I'm not even trying to make it. I just like stepping on people.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
I don't even want to be elevated. I just want to keep walking straight, but just stepping on people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. That's what, yeah, I'm starting to step on podcasters. Be like, mm-hmm. People ask me like.
Coming for you, Mark Maron.
Mark. you and your dumb cats. Oh, man. He, like, have you watched Easy on mm-mm. Netflix?
No, I don't think so.
It's pretty good. I like it. It follows a bunch of different characters. But Mark Maron is on there.
Nice.
And Mark Maron can only play Mark Maron.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, did you watch Glow?
Yeah.
I loved him on Glow. Yeah. And I mean, he's just Mark Maron. He does coke and he's like, he is Mark Maron in right. the '80s, but he's just a wrestling promoter instead of a comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's great. And it's so funny that somebody can be such an ass and
neurotic fucking
and
weirdo.
Everybody still just loves him. Yeah. I mean, it's so funny. Most of what I remember listening to his podcast early on is different comedians coming on and him being like, so we hate each other. Why did that happen? So I do kind of admire that. Like, cause I think as somebody who's listened to him now for like, I don't know, 6 years or something, maybe. I feel like he has, you like get to hear him grow as a person from his early episodes to now, because he is, I mean, he's definitely still like a crazy dude.
Yeah.
But it's cool to hear him like patch things up with people and be like, yeah, I was really terrible and did this really weird stuff to you because I'm insecure. And it's cool to see people be straight up like that on a huge platform.
I think I stopped listening to him shortly after he did the Obama mm-hmm. cast. Just because, I don't know, I'll go through, like, with podcasts especially, I'll be like, all right, I don't need to listen mm-hmm. to this anymore.
That also could have very easily been his last episode. Like, where are you going to go from here?
Right, now? Yeah.
You had the president fly in.
Right.
He flew in, like, however far away, a couple miles away, and then motorcaded into your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Maybe just in the podcast at that point. Like, we made it, guys. Who are we going to get next? Like, Vladimir Putin is coming on next week.
We're going to interview the moon.
Go the opposite. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We made contact with aliens. Like, that's the only way he could really.
Yeah.
I'm going to the moon to interview.
I don't know how much money he makes, you know, from podcasting.
That's
true. So
I mean, maybe that's a big part of it too. It's like, how are you going to stop when all you have to do is go into your garage in your underwear and record ads?
Yeah, he doesn't even do like a video version, so he's just like,
yeah. And also, I wonder what happened with him when he moved to Zoom, because when I was really listening to him a lot, it was always in the garage, you know.
Yeah.
And I wonder how that's affected people, like recording a lot of stuff. You've done a lot of video episodes, haven't you?
Yeah, it's mostly, yeah.
How has that been going? Is it go okay? Is it harder?
It goes okay. It's not, you know, it's better to have a person in the actual mm-hmm. room with you, but
especially I feel like if you've never met.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is probably a lot of the people.
Yeah, right? Most of the people. Yeah. But I don't know. I feel like it's okay. One thing with Zoom, a technical thing, is if the person isn't wearing headphones, then Zoom does this thing where
it's doing the like filtering, so it can't hear the
audio
coming out.
Yeah, so it'll
laptop or
whatever. So it'll cut
mm-hmm.
like the audio,
mm-hmm.
and so that kind of.
So when I was here's some behind the scenes stuff. Ooh. I auditioned for BTS. American Idol again this year.
Oh, really?
Didn't make it, but I
man,
I didn't. I actually didn't get to go past the producers this time, but I had to set up like a Zoom audition in my studio where I do the Twitch stuff, and it was a nightmare getting good audio on Zoom because I had to figure out.
Wait, like, so you were singing over Zoom?
Yes. So I didn't even go to the producers this time because it was mid-pandemic, and they were like extra tough. Like I have a strong feeling if you had an issue with your audio, you probably just didn't get considered.
Right,
like it was one of those things. Like, look, we're just axing people. Like,
yeah.
But I had to figure out, like, okay, how can I turn off, like, the noise filtering and then all of the, like, compressing it does to make the streaming better and everything. You know what
it's
I mean?
It's terrible.
So, yeah, it's not ideal for audio whatsoever.
Especially singing, yeah.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, trying to mix, like, a stereo thing and make it sound good. Yeah, it was a nightmare. But I think it sounded okay. I recorded it. It was fine.
What'd you sing?
I did How Deep Is Your Love by the Bee Gees.
Mm-hmm. How deep is your love?
Yeah, I did it's like the PJ Morton version. You know PJ Morton?
Yes.
It's kind of like R&B gospel artist. He's really great. Yeah. He's a monster piano player and singer and probably a lot of other stuff, but that's how I know him.
Just a monster, just a terrible freak. Person, just a monster.
Just a pedophile. No, he's he's a freak of nature on the keys and vocalist. And he's also collaborated with a lot of really great people. So yeah, if you don't know PJ Morton, check him out.
Mm.
I'm plugging a guy who already has a huge fan base.
So we talked about a little artist named Kanye West earlier.
We're trying to put the people on who really need it.
Put him over, yeah.
Me and you have had our time.
Yeah.
It's time for us to let Kanye in. And
PJ Morton.
Yeah, and PJ Morton.
Open up these gates that we're keeping.
Yeah.
Man. Who's even the judges on American Idol now?
I think it's the same ones that there were when I actually sang for them in person like 4 years ago. It's Luke Bryan, Lionel Richie, and Katy Perry.
Mm. Okay.
The three amigos.
Yep.
they were obviously I don't feel that I know them any better as people after meeting them, but they're all right. Like Luke Bryan was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Lionel Richie seemed really nice. Katy Perry's not that cool, but I also, I don't know. I feel like if I was in that position, I also would not be, I wouldn't care anything about the person that was singing for me either. Cause it's like, I'm a millionaire. I'm getting paid $29 million or whatever to do this. And like, you're the last person. Cause I was the last person to sing in Nashville, or the second to last to sing in Nashville, on that season that I actually sang for them in person.
Yeah.
So at that point they're like, we're taking lights down and stuff.
Yeah.
Like can you just get this over with?
See in the background, yeah.
My audition went a lot like, did you make it to like the last season of The Office? American Office?
Yeah.
When Andy has a full-blown meltdown, that's pretty much
that was you? How you freaked out?
Like, walked in while somebody else was auditioning and, yeah.
Oh, did you really?
No.
Oh, okay, I was like...
No, there's just a lot of like... There's a lot of... this is going to blow everybody's minds, but there's a lot of contrivance in reality television. This is a bombshell that you heard it first here.
Oh no.
But just for instance, like before I went in, they forced me to pace back and forth on camera.
Oh, to be like, oh my God.
Like, so they could have like B-roll of
B-roll pace like, footage. Oh,
oh no. But then the funny thing is, and of course they know this, but that makes you really anxious to force yourself to pace and be like looking really anxious. All of a sudden your body's like, oh, we're in anxiety
mode. Anxious. Yeah.
And so it works both ways for them. Cause then they get the real footage.
Damn.
Where you're actually nervous.
Oh man. Damn. American Idol.
But I mean, I don't know if they asked me to do it again next year. We'll see. I might do it again. It wasn't this time because it was on Zoom. Yes. It made it like, 100% increase in likelihood that you're going to get turned down.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was so much easier.
Right.
Because it was a
in your room.
Debacle to do the live, like to sing for the producers twice in person. Both of those were like 4+ hour ordeals because you're going and waiting. Even if you have a time slot, you're going and waiting for a long time. And then the taping, even though I went to like the, arguably the easier one where it's like the private one.
Yeah. Because
they do like sometimes they do those open casting ones where they have like people wait in line for 2 days and shit like that. But we still were there for like 14 hours. On the private day. So yeah, I mean, I'm fine to just do it on Zoom for 30 minutes and then get told no. That's okay.
Damn. Why y'all making Lionel Richie work 14 hours?
Yeah. Well, that's what's funny. Like, so the celebrities show up at like 2 p.m.
Yeah.
So you get there at like 6 or 7 a.m. and just get huddled up and start acting, you know, getting cranked up to do your monkey dance for the for the television. They have you do like a lot of B-roll and commercials, and they were like, "All right, we're handing out New Year's Eve glasses or New Year's glasses, and we're gonna do a New Year's commercial and all that kind of stuff." Yeah. You know, we got to do our Christmas commercial. So you do a lot of free labor.
Do you get paid at all? To
No. Absolutely not.
Damn, dude.
A lot of other people do. That's like, I thought about that this last time because there's essentially people who, the producers at the base level are kind of like the talent scouts. Like, they'll just, I don't even really know what all the different processes are. I know there's like a lot of different funnels that are getting people to these shows, different paid, you know, there's premium versions of it that are kind of sketchy where like these quote unquote talent agencies go around and hold like these auditions that are paid auditions. And then if you make it through this paid audition, then you get like recommended to American Idol producers.
That's fucking.
And then if you
sketchy
make stuff. It to them, then you might get to do a real audition. Then you might get to go to the show. So if there's people like spending money to do it and stuff. So at least I didn't do that. I feel good about
people
not spending money on it.
Oh, so people will like you would pay to get
like an audition with a person who knows a person.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's grody. Because, I mean, obviously, a lot of what they're doing is taking money from, like, some poor 14-year-old kid's parents who, like, believe in their kid, you know, and it's messed up. I mean, a lot of them are just rich people who are just blowing money and whatever, but I think about all the people who are like, my little girl, she's really good.
She can sing.
She sings like an angel, and this person, you know, this is going to be her big shot. To get her out of wherever in Mississippi or whatever.
Pumpkin Nut, Arkansas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's a, I'm grateful for the experience because I feel like I had no idea what that world was until I actually
showbiz, baby.
Yeah. Because people say stuff to you and you feel like you know, but then something, for instance, I'm trying to think of a better one because I know there are better ones, but like, after I made it the first time on American Idol, when I was actually going to go through to the celebrity judges part, they were like, so you need to lose weight, like just so
yes,
blunt,
love
like
it.
Hit you like, you need to think about like getting a trainer and changing your diet and
baby.
And like sure go ahead is. And start exercising and blah, 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 like really honest, and brutally so about just everything. Like, you're not a fat guy, but you're not a skinny guy. So like, they didn't say that, but that's what they were saying.
Can you lose 40 pounds in 2 weeks?
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. It's great in a terrible way.
Yeah, because you just, I don't know. I put so much, because I kind of, they kind of ran the gambit of all the different talent shows at that time. Like, they put me, the same producer, well, I'm really grateful for. He really did hook me up. With a lot of opportunities. I auditioned for America's Got Talent. I get them all.
I mean, we're just, yes.
America's Got Idol. but yeah, same guy put me through that whole thing. And I think at that time, when I first found out about that, because that was the first thing like that I'd ever done, I thought like, this is make or break.
Yeah, like, this is it.
Because it's like, it doesn't matter if I win the show. If I get on TV, like, I've got it made.
Yeah.
Because in my head, I was like, if I am on television, that's the big time.
Right, yeah.
But then in reality, like, even if you do make it on for 30 seconds or whatever, like, that just comes and goes.
It doesn't,
like,
it's...
No, you're not getting a ticket in the mail, like, to Hollywood. All right. You know? Come on out here. It's time to start your new life. Inside, you'll find a deed to a new house. But it definitely kind of just sobered me a little bit, like, it was really good for me to have those experiences kind of back to back for a couple of years. Like, this is really tough, and this isn't even the avenue that I want to take.
Right.
I didn't realize how I just didn't have that much faith in myself to do it myself. Like, I felt like I needed a platform.
Somebody,
like a television show or whatever, like a record deal would have been the thing before that in my mind, which is just so bogus to me now.
Right.
The idea of having a record deal is like something that a 90-year-old man thinks
that's
is a good
antiquated,
idea.
Antiquated, yeah.
Know? Yeah. And every 15-year-old that's making music now knows that you can just put it on everything right. so easily for $20, and it's like, why would you ever give someone your money? Like, just do it yourself,
right?
And, which it is. I mean, it's a gift and a curse, because it's like, now we don't make money on music, which like digital music, I mean, just is someone else is making all that money. We don't know who it is exactly. They, when we find them, we're gonna get them.
I think it's the that's the Spotify guy.
Yeah,
right?
It is. It's Mr. Spotify.
I forgot the CEO of Spotify. But
yeah, I don't know, but I know that that somebody's making a lot more money than me on my streams. You know,
that's true.
Yeah, I was just reading something recently about how there's like a huge fight to get them to pay like half of a penny for streams or something like that. Like, man, it's gonna be a long road to something like fair pay when it comes to that, because it's just like that's. It's going to take 100 years if you're starting with half a penny.
Yeah.
And that's like a serious litigation. Like, it's going to take lawyers and lawyers to make that happen.
Yeah, I forget. I saw some sort of, I forgot how many streams you need a month just to like cover rent, but it's like 600,000 or something.
Yeah. The thing, so one of the things that, it's gotten murkier and murkier since I first heard it, but one of the things I always used to tell people, and I don't remember exactly what the anecdote is, but it's something like at the height of his fame, Justin Bieber was making like fast food money on his streams. Something crazy like that. Like, it, maybe it wasn't fast food money, but it was like shockingly low compared to what he's worth and what his music, like he had like billions of followers on Twitter or whatever at his height. I remember seeing a stat that was like some huge percentage of the world followed him on Twitter. Something really scary, like 30% or something. But yeah, streaming's a wash. I've made probably more money selling tapes.
Merch, yeah.
Yeah, like even just the tapes by themselves because the streams are so whack. But yeah, I mean, merch is definitely
merch
the
is
way
king.
To go. Yeah, and we... probably like maybe we started doing it a year ago by now. I mean, the pandemic's going on almost 2 years. Since I started doing gigs again, I've just been doing kind of like a donation based system for merch, where we don't really have a person manning it, just so there's less interaction and changing hands with money and stuff. So we have like a donation jar for the physical money, and then we have a plaque with just like my digital payment info, just QR codes. And I just tell people in between sets, like, pay what you want. If you have $5, but you really want the t-shirt, like, just tell somebody that you enjoyed the show. It's all good.
Nice.
And that's pretty much exclusively reaped like benefits. Like, most of the time people give you more.
Yeah.
Or at least pay what it's worth, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And if they can, they'll give you more. And I think I'm just going to leave it like that for a while, because it feels less, I don't know, it feels less invasive. It feels like people can just kind of go up and, like, people who might not want to come up and talk to somebody and ask questions can just walk up and peruse and take some stuff and put some money in.
Yeah.
And so far, I haven't had anybody rip me off, but we don't put everything out there. So even if they took everything, it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
We did fine. If they run off with the money, that's when I worry.
do you keep a gun? To shoot the person.
Do I keep that thing on me?
Keep that thing? That heater?
No, I don't. Mm. I when I travel with Jamel Richardson, he has a security guard, and sometimes I'm like,
he has a security guard.
Yeah.
That's cool.
His road manager, really, but he's a police officer, and he's a very large man, and he just walks around with us and looks scary. And
that's cool.
Sometimes when I'm with him, I'm like, man, I want a big security guard. Be cool. Be cool to just show up somewhere with just me and a very large man who just walks around with me, just looks scary.
Go hang out in gyms in Knoxville. Yeah. It'd be like,
go scouting.
Hello, sir.
This isn't what you think it is. This is employment.
I'm not cruising.
Yeah, right now. I'm here looking for a big burly man to protect me. No, I don't know. I mean, part of me feels like it'll be a really long time before I need something like that. But then also, stuff. People would be crazy.
People do be crazy.
People do crazy things. Mm. The more I see, like, because we joke, but like the more I see, I mean, I'm sure you've shared them before. I every once in a while I'll see a friend that's like, this band was on tour and everything they have got stolen. And it's just like,
yeah,
their entire van is gone with all their drums and their basses and guitars and everything is gone.
I think I'll just quit. Yeah. I just quit music. I'm like, all right, this shit is not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but what's cool though is I have seen a couple bands like on tour, everything is stolen, and then like the opener, somebody's just like backline, you're good. Like use our stuff. It'll be weird, but it'll be okay. So I don't know. I wouldn't quit, but I would definitely be crushed.
Yeah, I'd be crushed for a while.
Because also using, I don't know if you've ever had to use renter's insurance for anything, but that just seems like such a nightmare to be like trying to replace guitars and stuff that have been stolen. Yeah, it always breaks my heart to see that, because it doesn't even matter if it's not really about the dollar value, which I mean, I do sit there and go like, that's $20,000 right there.
Yeah.
Like if I see that somebody's got some crazy pedal board that was stolen. But it's just, it guts you. Like, if somebody stole my guitar, I could get that pretty much that exact guitar. That if I'm thinking of like my Strat.
Yeah.
If somebody stole that, yes, I could get another whatever American Standard Strat that would be pretty much the same. But that one was like my grandmother bought that.
Right, yeah.
So just stuff like that. Yeah, I can't even think of
sentimental
about.
Stuff.
It would be terrible.
Mm.
So yeah, maybe I'll get a large security guard. We'll see.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
Start making security guard money first, and then.
All right. You're gonna do a song?
Yeah. Okay. I was, when you texted me about doing a cover, I was going over some stuff with my wife, because a lot of the gigs I do are like 70-30 as far as like covers to originals. If I'm playing like 3 hours, 4 hours, or whatever somewhere. I do a lot of covers, so I have like a huge list of songs that I like to play, or that get requested a lot and stuff like that. And so when you asked me to do a cover, I was like, do I learn a new song? Like, do I want to do one of these songs? And something I do really bad is if somebody asked me to sing a song, even if I can go to a venue and literally play for 3 hours without stopping very long. If you ask me to sing one song in like a family setting or something, I just can't think of the song.
Yeah.
But she wanted me to do Crazy by Gnarls Barkley, and I'm going to do my best.
Hell yeah.
I've been doing it at shows recently, so give it a shot.
All right. We're going to do the song now.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place, and even your emotions had an echo and so much space. So when you're out there without care, I was out of time. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I guess I knew too much. Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Possibly. And I hope that you are having the time of your life. But think twice, that's my only advice. Ooh. Come on now, who do you? Bless your soul. think you're in control. Well, I think you're crazy. Oh, I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy. Just like me. Ever since I was little, it looked like fun. And it's no coincidence I've come. And I can die when I'm done. Well, maybe I'm crazy.
Sure.